It's always important to look for cues that you're given of what the message is going to be. You know, you can prepare for it, but it doesn't mean that you know what it's going to be. And knowing that often Ralph takes favorites, I was expecting to see something there. And in my mind, I was thinking 325, heaven came down and glory filled my soul. But then I realized in that last hymn, I had it wrong. When I, in awesome wonder, consider what thy hands have made, then sings my soul how great thou art. It's not about the glory that came into my life that we're going to think about today. It's the awesome wonder of God. And how when we think about it, there is no other response the soul can have than to sing out how great thou art. Two notes and one apology. Sometimes I feel a little bit bad for the topics I choose. Briefly, perhaps in their complexity or in the number of passages that we'll read. But my thinking is this. We're given the scriptures for a reason. They contain a very clear message with the intent of God. We find at least twice the Lord Jesus Christ himself says in the volume of the book, it is written of me, and then two on the road to Emmaus, he went through the scriptures with them for the things pertaining to himself. So I cannot feel bad for the things that I read of God telling us about himself and about his son. The other thing is, normally I don't do this, but I'm giving myself leeway to do it today. When I study, I do not use the King James Version on purpose. But normally when I read it, I'm able to take the notes that I have and sort of meld them in with the verses. The problem I have today is I have a fair amount of material here, so I don't think I can keep track of all of that. So what I'll be reading from is a different translation, so it's sort of up to you to figure in where the differences are. Yep. It is. I can try to talk louder, but. Well, now you messed me up. No. I think I was done with that point. So the introductory theme here is sort of related to symbolism. And we're going to look at a lot of symbolism today. And it's, to me, it's clearly the intent of God to give us a symbolism. It's clearly ambiguous in a lot of ways. And there are times when you find symbolism that is similar in multiple passages, but always a little bit different. So the question is, you know, are those things the same and their variances? Or are those things sort of associated but not the same? So some things to keep in mind. The other thing is, with the symbolism that we will be looking at, sometimes you could say to yourself, why didn't God just put pictures in the Bible? And you'll see what I mean when we start to read things. And I think that's also on purpose. You know, the way that he created us in his image, you know, we have this thing called an imagination. And there is this thought of expectation, of waiting for something, of knowing the condition that we are in now, but God laying out for us what he's going to do. And I think that's an important exercise for us to read these things that we have here, to have an understanding and to think about them and meditate upon them in our mind, to have an understanding of what they mean to us. And two things that I was thinking about with this, you know, there's two examples where in one example we have in Daniel where he says he was studying the books of Jeremiah and finally he understood the 70 years time, right? So he applied himself to a very difficult topic and was able, over a long period of time, we don't know how long, it took him a long time to figure it out, but he finally understood it. And the other sort of strange example is in the book of Revelation. When the number of the beast is given, it is not that the number of the beast is this. That it says, to the man who has understanding, let him try to figure out the number of the beast. It is 666. So God clearly wants us in the Word, trying to understand difficult topics, for the point of understanding who he is. That's good enough for now. So we'll start in Ezekiel chapter 1. In the 30th year, on the 5th day of the 4th month, while I was among the exiles at the Kibar River, the heavens opened and I saw a vision of God. Now a quick timeline here of Ezekiel. So we know that Israel was taken captive into Babylon. We know that Judah was taken captive into the Syrians. But what happens with Ezekiel and someone else is sort of in the mix that we'll look at a little bit later. In 622 BC, Josiah becomes the king of Judah under the captivity of the Assyrians. At some point, Israel becomes an autonomous state aside from Assyria. In 609, Josiah dies at the Battle of Megiddo against Egypt. So they were an autonomous state, but now they're under Egyptian control. Egypt takes over, installs Jehoaz, and then Jehoiakim as a vassal king. In 605 BC, the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar take over Egypt. And in other words, because they took over Egypt, they also take over Judah. Jehoiakim switches his loyalty from Egyptian to Babylonian. And what Nebuchadnezzar did to sort of ensure that that loyalty would stay, because he had just, you know, left Egypt and gone to Babylonia, he takes important captives prisoner, and one of those is Daniel. And part of Daniel's message is the prophecy concerning the destruction of Jerusalem that would be. In 602, so 3 years later, Jehoiakim switches his loyalty back to Egypt. But Nebuchadnezzar fights against Egypt, takes over Judah, removes Jehoiakim as king, and sets up Zedekiah as king. And he also, again, takes captives of important people. And among this second set is Ezekiel. Ezekiel's message, and in the title in the Hebrew, is God strengthens. God strengthens. And Ezekiel's prophecies are divided in two sections. The first half foretelling the destruction of Jerusalem because of the sin of Israel. The second half, after the destruction of Jerusalem, foretells of God's restoration plan for them. So we'll start in Ezekiel chapter 1. We read the first verse there. Verse 2. On the fifth day of the month, it was the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's exile, the word of the Lord came to the priest Ezekiel, the son of Buzi, at the Kibar River in the land of the Babylonians. The hand of the Lord came on him there. So now he's speaking. And as I watched, I noticed a windstorm coming from the north, an enormous cloud with lightning flashing, such that bright light rimmed it and came forth from it, glowing amber from the middle of a fire. So one thing to note in the passages we're going to read is where the individual is and where he's taken to in the vision. So Ezekiel has a vision here, visions of God, but he's not removed from the earth. He's not taken into heaven. He's a man on the earth who has a vision of God, but he's still on the earth. And the things that he sees when he's going to explain this vision, in the beginning of it is a windstorm traveling towards him. Now remember, Judah at this time was in captivity in Babylonia. So you see the vision of God, the vision of God that Ezekiel says he's having, and the windstorm is coming to them. Something to think about. What do we see in this vision? And these themes are important, so that's why I list them. There's the lightning, a bright light, amber, and the understanding there is sort of amber, we would think of the yellow-gold color. But the idea here is that it's sort of a molten material that has the hue of sort of a silver-gold mix in it. So it's most likely a sort of a liquid material. Again, what I said before about symbolism, we don't fully understand exactly the things that he has here, and I would say that he does not fully understand the things he says here, because often he says, the things that I see are like this. So he does not have the words to fully explain it. But the vision that he's giving us is something that is important to us to try to understand. There's the amber material coming from the middle of a fire. So again, thinking on these things, because there's repetition in what we're looking at. Verse 5. In the fire were what looked like four living beings. In their appearance, they had human form. These four living beings that he's talking to here, I'll give you the answer. We're going to read Ezekiel chapter 10. And verse 20 there, he says he knows that these living beings are the cherubim. Now, these are actual cherubim. In both the tabernacle and the temple, you have the carvings of the cherubim. And in both cases, they're meant to be sort of man-like beings with wings. But the cherubim here are very important. And what we see here is that they are bearing the throne of God. And we'll get to that. Each had four faces and four wings. The legs were straight, but the soles of their feet were like calves' feet. They gleamed like polished bronze. Now, there's a lot of things I'm skipping over here that deserve attention, but I'm interested in a very particular theme here. But I will stop here in verse 7 to talk about the description of bronze. There's three places we find this. One is the cherubims in Ezekiel. The second is Daniel chapter 10, depending on how we'll look at that one too. Depending on what you want to interpret there, powerful beings are described as being the color of bronze. And then in Revelation, both in chapter 1 and chapter 2, we find that associated with the vision of Jesus Christ glorified. The point is that what he's seeing here, these four living beings, these cherubim, with a color of looking like bronze, they're put in a very high position with the other two things that we find bronze being associated with. So they are very important to God, probably very powerful, probably very important in their role. And remember, Ezekiel is seeing this vision coming towards him, towards the captivity of Judah in Babylon, a vision of God coming to the people. In verse 8, they had human hands under their wings on their four sides. As for their faces and the wings of the four of them, their wings touched each other. They did not turn as they moved, but went straight ahead. Another short point here, it's something that I think we don't pay attention to. There are not a lot of creatures in the Bible that have wings. I think we often think of our images of angels of having wings, but that is often not the case. And in fact, that I was aware of, there's only three sort of examples of things that have wings. There's the cherubim, as we're seeing here, the seraphim in Isaiah chapter 6, and in some cases, angels. In some cases, angels, in particular in Zechariah chapter 5. And there's an imagery in 2 Samuel chapter 22 of God riding on the wings of the cherubim. And we'll see here sort of why that's important, of why the wings are necessary. And as I mentioned before, if you look at different accounts of the cherubim, you'll find different accounts of the number of wings there. There's also other differences, but again, you know, leaving it to the reader, what do you want to read into that? Their wings touched each other. They did not turn as they moved, but they went straight ahead. Verse 10, their faces had this appearance. Each of the four had the face of a man, the face of a lion, the face of an ox, and the face of an eagle. Again, there's significance there, but we're going to pass over that. Their wings were spread out above them. Each had two wings touching the wings of one on the other beings and on the other side, and two wings covering their bodies. Each of them moved straight ahead wherever the spirit would go, that they would go, without turning as they went. So you have this image of cherubim here with some description of what they look like, the description of their wings, the description of their faces, of their legs and their feet. And we find here that there is a movement to them in verse 12. Each moved straight ahead. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go without turning as they went. Now, the understanding of the use of spirit here is extremely confusing. In Hebrew, the use of spirit can mean spirit, as in the life or of a being, or wind, and quite literally wind. Especially in the imagery that we have here of this vision of God coming from a storm, right? And we'll find later that there are the sounds of thundering and of wind and of roaring wind. So how do you interpret here what the Spirit is meaning? I think the best application is that this is the Spirit, the will of where they are going to go. Because in a few verses down, it talks about the spirit of the creatures themselves, but I don't think that's what he's talking about here. So there is a will to these creatures that is moving them, guiding them, telling them where to go. Verse 12, to confirm, each moved straight ahead. Wherever the spirit would go, without turning as they went. Verse 13, in the middle of the living beings, so we have four living beings here, in the middle of the living beings with something like burning coals of fire or like torches, it moved back and forth among the living beings. It was bright, and lightning was flashing out of the fire. So you have these four living beings, these four cherubim, and we've seen the description of them. In the middle of the four, we have this thing like fire, like coals, like lightning, like flames, like torches. We'll see all these words, right? So again, in your mind, the four living beings in the middle, there's something like fire there, something like coals. Now again, what do you want to make these connections to? Because clearly this is not a very literal explanation that God is giving to us here. He wants us to understand the imagery that he has here. And there is lots of imagery in the Bible. And there is lots of imagery that is very similar. So how are these things connected? And I'll give one note here on the what's in the middle of those four living beings we'll find later on. And in here, he says like burning coals of fire. We know that in the tabernacle there were burning coals of incense. We know that on the altar there was the sacrifices that were made. But not only in the coals, but as we'll see later, there's ash there, and the ash was removed and thrown outside the camp. And that's enough for that. Moving on, verse 14, the living beings moved backward and forward as quickly as flashes of lightning. Again, the imagery of lightning. Then I looked and I saw one wheel on the ground beside each of the four beings. So you have the four beings in the middle, or the coals, the fire, something that looks like fire. And next to each one of the four living beings, there's a wheel next to them. The imagery of wheels will come up and come up again. And one verse that we're not going to look at, so I'll read it now, is in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 9. He has the image of the Almighty and the Son of Man who comes to him. And he says, "While I was watching, thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His attire was white like snow. The hair of his head was like lamb's wool. His throne was ablaze with fire, and its wheels were all aflame." So you have this idea, and you have this also in other verses that we won't look at. The idea of God sitting on a throne atop wheels, and there's fire in the midst of the wheels and to some extent in the throne. And you see the movement of God. Again, the windstorm coming to Ezekiel. The movement of God, of a heavenly God, dealing with men on this earth, of his throne on these wheels moving about on the earth. Verse 16, "The appearance of the wheels and their construction was like gleaming jasper." Now, again, this is a very confusing point. Every time we are told of a precious stone, good luck trying to figure out what it really means. Jasper can mean a lot of different colors. The best understanding that I've read is that it was most likely clear and potentially looking like something like crystal or diamond. So again, in your mind's image, the four living beings, the fire in the middle, a wheel by each side. "The appearance of the wheels and their construction was like gleaming jasper, and all four wheels looked alike. Their structure was like a wheel within a wheel." Or some would say a wheel where the wheel inside was at a 90-degree angle to the outer wheel. Again, this is sort of the active mobility of God, these wheels indicating God moving about in the heavenly places and on the earth, of his throne above. This is his method of getting around. Verse 17, "When they moved, they would go in any of the four directions they faced without turning as they moved." Again, thinking back to verse 13, the Spirit would will them where they were going to go. So you have the movement of the cherubim and these wheels going wherever they're being told to go. Verse 17, "When they moved, they would go in any of the four directions they faced without turning as they moved." And again, you could think maybe there that there is no need for them to turn because they are not the ones deciding where they're going. Verse 18, "The rims were high and awesome, and the rims of all four wheels were full of eyes all around." So you have the imagery of these wheels as the mobility of God. It's God moving, and we'll see later, it's not just God, but his throne. He's on the throne, on the top of these wheels, and this is how he's moving around, both in heaven and on the earth. And in the wheels are eyes all around. And later he says inside and outside, whatever that means. And so you're thinking, you know, there's sort of an immediate imagery of the eyes there, of God's concern, his omniscience, of where he's going, of what he's doing, of where he's going to go and what he's going to do, of that he sees it all, that he's moving around rapidly, both in heaven and on earth, and he's concerned with what people are doing. And I shouldn't say people. Every time I say that, if I don't correct myself, he's concerned with his whole creation, of what it's doing. He's watching. This is Ezekiel in captivity in Babylon, and he sees the imagery of a storm coming toward him. The vision of God that he sees is coming towards him. God is actively moving to Ezekiel, and he wants to see what's happening there, and he knows all. Verse 19, "When the living beings were moved, the wheels beside them moved, the living beings rose up from the ground, the wheels rose up too." So what he sees is the living beings with the wheels underneath. They're on the ground. But remember, they have wings. They can move up from the ground too. So this is not an imagery of, and later on we find that this picture, he calls it, when he summarizes it, he says he saw the glory of God. This is the glory of God. The glory of God residing on the earth. But it is not bound to the earth. It can go up as well. "When the living beings moved, the wheels beside them moved. When the living beings rose up from the ground, the wheels rose up too." Meaning the eyes as well. Verse 20, "Wherever the spirit would go, they would go. And the wheels would rise up beside them because the spirit of the living being was in the wheel." So here's where you find the two spirits. My best guess is, in verse 20, the first spirit is talking about some will that is telling them where to go and how to move. And we find that that will inside of their plan, of their movement, there is also the will of the living being as well that we find is in the wheel. Again, the imagery of the storm and the fact that the spirit can be the wind, and we'll see some of the sounds that come out of it as well. The movement in the wheel, the movement of the living being, is sort of the will of the living being, the spirit of the living being. His goal, his purpose, is to go wherever he's told to go. That wind sound when he moves is his spirit. Verse 21, when the living beings moved, the wheels moved. When they stopped moving, the wheels stopped. When they rose up from the ground, the wheels rose up from the ground. The wheels rose up beside them because the spirit of the living being was in the wheel. Verse 22, over the heads of the living being was something like a platform or a dome. So again, you have the living beings, the fire in between them, the wheels underneath them. Under the platform, their wings were stretched out, each toward the other. Each of the beings also had two wings covering its body. When they moved, I heard the sound of their wings. It was like the sound of rushing waters, or the voice of the Almighty, or the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. Going back to the idea that there was a spirit that was guiding their movement. Well, now we find here that the sound when they moved of their wings sounded like the voice of the Almighty. So you have the imagery here of the voice of the Almighty directing where they're going. Directing the throne of God, directing the glory of God, directing the eyes and the wheels of what God is seeing both in heaven and on earth. So above this imagery, you have this platform, this separation. Verse 26, above the platform, over their heads, was something like sapphire, shaped like a throne. High above on the throne was a form that appeared to be a man. So here you have the introduction of the throne. You have the living beings with their wings, with wheels around them, the fire inside, a platform of ice or crystal separating them, and above that, a sapphire throne. With somebody sitting on it, the appearance of a man. Verse 27, I saw an amber glow. Again, the imagery there is not really of amber, but it's more of a molten silver gold material. And especially in the presence of all this fire gleaming. I saw an amber glow like a fire enclosed all around from his waist up. So this is the one, the man-like image on the throne. So from the waist up, he looked like this molten silver-gold material. From the waist down, I saw something that looked like fire. There was a brilliant light around it, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds after the rain. This was the appearance of the surrounding brilliant light. It looked like the glory of the Lord. When I saw it, I threw myself face down, and I heard a voice speaking. He said to me, Son of man, stand on your feet, and I will speak with you. The theme that I'm after here, and we're not going to get to all of it, but the things that we will look at, is that God, in his ultimate almighty power, the voice of the Almighty, the one sitting on the throne, who is the creator of the whole world, of the things seen and unseen, is concerned with the things of men. That a man would have an image of the vision of God, that it would be coming to him, that he would talk, this voice of the man on the throne would be talking to Ezekiel. I will speak with you. Turn to Ezekiel chapter 10. A quick point about some of this imagery. One thing that we forget is that we read the Bible and think these things are unique. They are not. And it's true of a lot of things. But a few that I will point out here, and this is done on purpose. Lightning was a very prevalent imagery in the gods of the Canaanites. A many-faced god, as we find in the cherubim here, was something that was found in the gods of the Egyptians. Gods of gems, and we'll find in some of the descriptions here of all the colors that Ezekiel sees. Now remember, Ezekiel was a priest, so he was familiar with the jewels that adorned the high priest. And so some of his imagery, his description, is probably coming from that because that's what he knew. But the idea of a god, a deity adorned in gems, that comes from, is also a theme in the deities of the Babylonians. and also names that we find associated with God, King of Kings, the Son, and the God of Heaven, also things that we find in the religions of the pagan world at that time. Now, the idea here is not that God stole it, but rather that God is trying to impress on his people that I am better than all of these other gods. We found this when Moses went to Pharaoh. The magicians could keep up to a point when he was doing the miracles, but they could not for all of them, right? So God is trying to say, I'm going to show you the things that you know of this pagan world. I am more powerful. And Ezekiel's message to these people, when, I think it's in chapter 5 or 6, God tells him, these people, not only have they not respected what I told them to do, not only have they gone into the world, but they have multiplied abomination compared to the other nations. It's not that they were just as bad. They were 10 times, 100 times worse. And God is trying to impress on them both in the destruction that he's going to bring to them, to Jerusalem, but also in the restoration that he will bring after, that he is the Almighty God, that he is the one true God, that he is the creator God, that he has all the power, and he deserves their attention. Ezekiel chapter 10 and verse 1, as I watched, I saw on the platform above the top of the cherubim something like sapphire resembling the shape of a throne. The Lord said to the man dressed in linen. Now we meet this man in chapter 9. And this man, keep in mind that there's a man dressed in linen. And he, in chapter 9 and in chapter 10, he does things that happen before punishment occurs. In chapter 9, strong men come out of the city and they're going to kill. The man in linen goes and puts numbers and marks on the head of the people who are going to be killed. And we find what he does here. He does something before disaster occurs. But keep this in mind. The Lord said to the man dressed in linen, go between the wheelwork, underneath the cherubim. Remember, what was underneath the cherubim, in the midst of them? Fill your hands with burning coals from among the cherubim and scatter them over the city. He went as I watched. Now at this time, remember, the glory of God, the throne, peace, is sitting above the cherubim. Verse 3, the cherubim were standing on the south side of the temple when the man went in, and a cloud filled the inner court. Then the glory of the Lord arose from the cherub and moved to the threshold of the temple. The temple was filled with the cloud, while the court was filled with the brightness of the Lord. What his people have done caused him to depart. This is when the glory of the Lord is on the earth. Now, quickly going to Daniel chapter 10. And this is sort of the bridging passage. Daniel chapter 10 and verse 1. Daniel has the vision of a man. Now, there's a few theories about what this is. I think it's hard not to believe one of them. Daniel has seen this vision a few times. In chapter 7, he sees the Almighty One and a man, son of man, come to meet him, who is given power to rule. Daniel chapter 10 and verse 1, in the third year of King Cyrus of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel. This message was true and concerned a great war. He understood the message and gained insight by the vision. Again, these things are important for us to look at, to understand, to learn about who God is. He gained insight by the vision. In those days, Daniel was mourning for 3 whole weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat, no wine came to my lips, nor did I anoint myself with oil until the end of those 3 weeks. On the 24th day of the first month, I was beside a great river, the Tigris. I looked up, and I saw a man clothed in linen. Around his waist was a belt made of gold. His body resembled yellow jasper, and his face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like blazing torches. Remember the imagery of what Ezekiel saw in the midst of the cherubim. It looked like coals, it looked like ash, but he said it also looked like torches, blazing torches. His arms and his feet had the gleam of polished bronze. His voice thundered like the sound of a large crowd. Only I, Daniel, saw the vision. The men who were with me did not see me. Now, go to Revelation chapter 1. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 12. I turned to see whose voice was speaking to me. And when I did so, I saw 7 golden lampstands. And in the midst of the lampstands was one like a son of man. He was dressed in a robe, In Daniel, we saw the man was dressed in linen. The man is dressed in a robe extending down to his feet, and he wore a wide golden belt around his chest. Same thing in Daniel. His head and hair were as white as wool. We don't find that in Daniel. Even as white as snow, and his eyes were like a fiery flame. We do find that in Daniel, like burning torches. His feet were like polished bronze refined in a furnace. His voice was like the roar of many waters. He held seven stars in his right hand and a sharp double-edged sword extending out of his mouth. His face shone like the sun shining at full strength. When I saw him, I fell down at his feet as though I were dead. But he placed his right hand on me and said, "Do not be afraid. I am the first and the last, the one who lives. I was dead, but look, now I am alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys of death and Hades. Therefore, write what you saw, what is, and what will be after these things." The imagery of, that we see of the glory of God pertaining to the things on the earth. And Ezekiel is strictly in connection with the temple. But the ability of God to move around with the wheels and the wings. And of his ability and desire to see with the eyes that were in the wheels. And of his spirit moving the direction of that, of the wheel work, if you will, with a throne above it and a man seated on it, presiding currently. Of God's intention to come to his people in captivity, to speak with a man named Ezekiel. But because of all the wrong things they had done, that glory departs. It is removed from the earth. We find in Daniel chapter 10, he sees a vision of God as well. And what we find here, the difference here, is John sees a vision as well. He remains on the earth, but he is escorted in this vision into heaven. So now the things we are seeing are in heaven. That glory that departed, we now are brought into heaven. And we find some of the very same imagery associated with the resurrected, glorified Jesus Christ. Of that fire, of that bronze, of the sound of lightning. If you go over to Revelation chapter 4, the reason I think that's an important bridge section is because you have this imagery in the Old Testament pertaining to Israel, of its destruction and of its restoration, both in Ezekiel and in Daniel. Then you're introduced to it again in Revelation, pertaining to the things that John is seeing. And in Revelation chapter 1 and 19, like Ezekiel, like Daniel, there were two themes to Revelation. The things that are, and those were Revelation chapter 2 and 3, and the things that are to come, and that's everything after that, the imagery that we saw. Revelation chapter 4 and verse 1. After these things, so after the things that are, I looked and there was a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice I heard spoke to me like a trumpet saying, "Come up here that I can show you what must happen after these things." And immediately I was in the spirit and a throne was standing in heaven with someone seated on it. And that imagery of someone sitting on the throne is utterly important. We find in Ezekiel, in Daniel, and in other places, that of the court. God is sitting on his throne. There is the theme of law and of court. He is on the throne, both in the time of Ezekiel and the vision that he saw in Daniel and here in Revelation. And he is presiding over his creation. He is concerned about what people are doing. He is taking note. And he is making sure that everybody knows that he is the Creator God. The one seated on it was like jasper and carnelian in appearance, and a rainbow, we saw this in Ezekiel, looking like it was made of emerald, encircling the throne. In Ezekiel, it said it looked like after a rainstorm, so you have the image there of the multiple colors. Here we find it was green. Verse 4, in a circle around the throne were 24 other thrones, and seated on these thrones were 24 elders. They were dressed in white clothing and had golden crowns on their head. From the throne came out flashes of lightning and roaring crashes of thunder, seven flaming torches, which are the seven spirits of God. Again, God's concern, the seven spirits of God, which were burning in front of the throne. In another place, he says, the seven spirits of God that went out into the earth. The mobility of God, the concern of God with his creation, of actively sitting on the throne, presiding over, being concerned with, through the eyes, seeing, with the wheels moving about, knowing what his people are doing. Keeping tab, and we see here the vision now in heaven preparing for his people. In the front of the throne, so now we're on the top looking at the throne, something like a sea of glass, like crystal. So we have that platform or that dome. Before, we were looking up. We were on the level of the cherubim, looking up to see the throne above it. Now we see the throne, and there's a sea of glass before it. And what we find here is the four living creatures are on the same level as the throne. They're not below anymore. They're on the same level now. Again, we're in heaven now, not on the earth. In the middle of the throne, around the throne, were four living creatures, full of eyes in front and in back. Each of the four in verse 8 had six wings, full of eyes all around. They never rested day or night. And we find later that in the eyes was the spirit of the living creatures. Before it was the wheels, now it's the eyes. They never rested day or night, saying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God, the all-powerful, who was, who is, and who is still to come." And whenever the living creatures gave glory, honor, and thanks to the one who sits on the throne, who lives forever, the 24 elders threw themselves to the ground and worshiped the one who lives forever. "You are worthy, O Lord our God, to receive glory and honor and power, since you created all things, and because of your will they existed and were created." We'll stop there. There was more, but our time is up. But the idea of a God who so clearly shows his power, his authority as the creator of all creation, being concerned with man, to come out of the storm to his people in captivity, to speak to Ezekiel, "I'm going to speak to you." He has no need to do that. There is no right that we deserve him to do that, but he does it anyway. That he is active in moving about in the earth, his glory moving about. He is active in seeing what is happening. He is active now in heaven, as John saw him in the vision, preparing. And in chapter 21, we find, in chapter 5 of Revelation, we find in the midst of that throne, there is no bottom level anymore. It's all on the platform of ice or crystal. In the middle of the four living creatures, the elders, is the Lamb that was slain. Then you come to Revelation chapter 21. Out of heaven, John sees the new Jerusalem descend. In the context of Ezekiel, it was about the destruction that was going to come to Jerusalem, how God was unhappy with what they had done. They had multiplied sins and transgressions, and his glory departs. In John, we find it was in heaven. In Revelation 21, the glory of God in that temple now coming down to meet man. In Ezekiel, it was the thunderstorm coming to him. It was the wings and the wheels of the glory of God on the earth. In Revelation chapter 21, because of the one who was slain in the midst of that throne, in the midst of the cherubim, the new Jerusalem comes down. And he says, "Do you want to see the bride of the Lamb?" And in the midst of that temple is the glory of God. There is no need for light. There is no night there because the glory of God is there. The response of the individual to this, that God who could not reside in the temple permanently, instead of coming down to man's temple, he has given it to us. And we live there forever with peace, with him, like the living creatures, like the elders, glorifying the Creator God, the one who created us by his will. And we find in that imagery the all of the gemstones, all of the lightning, all of the glory, the fire, the amber in that city. At one point I'll just make, we're over time, so I apologize. In the imagery in the Old Testament, you find that piece of crystal ice separates the righteous, holy God from the things pertaining to the man. In Revelation, we do not find that anymore. There is no separation. We partake in his holiness. And my thought of this is we finally made it. You know, you can indulge yourself in this imagery to say we finally made it to heaven. Our Father, we just give thanks for these things that we have, that we could read these things, that you expect us to get something out of it, as we saw in Daniel, that he learned things from these visions, to see the glory of the God residing on earth, to know that you are concerned with what we are doing, who we are, that you sent your Son, the Lamb, to be slain, that we would have access to be able to enjoy your glory, that you can impress upon us that you are the Creator God, all-powerful, more so than anything on this earth, within our minds, within the things that we think up. and that we can worship you. Glory to an almighty God. Worship him, to fall down, to sing a new song, thinking of that coming day when we have access into heaven. We ask this in his precious name. Amen.